Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. This is Kyle Porter. I'll be joined shortly by Carson Cunningham as we interviewed Zach Robinson today. It was a lot of fun. Zach was great, told some great stories. Really appreciate him coming on the podcast. This is our sixth episode this fall. We've really enjoyed doing it. We are still looking for a sponsor if you're interested in being that sponsor so we can have more Zach Robinson-like interviews. Give us a shout, pistolsfiringblog@gmail.com, and we can get you some more information on that. But for now, let's get to the Zach Robinson interview.
Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. Joining me is Kyle Porter, and we have a special guest today, Zach Robinson, joining the podcast. Zach, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, what's going on, fellas? Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Good, Kyle.
Yeah, I think we're both we've both got a ton of questions here. Well, first of all, what are you doing now, Zach? You're in Dallas, is that correct?
Yeah. I moved here about 6 months ago. I was actually rehabbing my elbow from surgery. Came down here and then kind of started up doing some quarterback training back in March. Just kind of doing it on the side, trying to figure out what I was, wanting to do with my life, basically. And found a pretty good market here, obviously in Dallas, with football crazy city and state. And so right now I'm doing that, kind of weighing some other career options potentially. But for right now I'm doing this quarterback training and having a lot of fun with it and coaching some kids up.
Are you still keeping the door open though for the NFL in case somebody calls?
I'm pretty content with it being over. I had some Canadian offers back in the spring, and I was just like, man, that is a totally different story to go up there and try to revive a career playing in Canada. So I was pretty I knew once I had surgery it was very, very slim chance. But you never know, there's guys that chop like flies here as the season gets going, as we're already seeing.
Yeah, the golf in Canada is probably not what it is down here in Texas.
Yeah, it wouldn't be ideal.
I did want to talk a little bit about your NFL days in terms of, you played with some guys that were obviously, Tom Brady, Matthew Stafford. Who were the guys? And you can throw Whedon in there, but who are the three guys that you played with or maybe saw that just had the best arms of anybody that you experienced?
Yeah, I mean, I think, going to play with in New England straight out of college was a pretty eye-opening experience just from, seeing how that guy, Brady, operated every day on a day-to-day basis. Like, man, you can see why this guy is who he is. I mean, it was every single day. I mean, the most competitive guy I've ever seen. I mean, throwing his helmet after an incomplete pass in 7-on-7 in, the middle of May. I mean, it's insane how competitive he is. But in terms of overall arm talent, Matthew Stafford is the best I've seen by far. The guy I can, throw from all different angles with touch, with everything. I mean, it's stupid. Some of the throws he makes, you end up just kind of laughing in the QB room, like looking at each other like, dude, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, he's pretty special. And I mean, I honestly got to throw Brandon in there too. Brandon, in terms of spinning the ball consistently, Brandon might be the best that I've seen. He spins it so well that he's got a strong arm. Everybody knows he's accurate, but when you spin it, it looks like it's coming even that much faster. So he has, an unbelievable ability to do that and make every single throw in the book. And so, those few guys, Dalton was really good. He was really accurate, especially on underneath stuff. But, the level of accuracy that you see at the NFL level is just, it's crazy.
Okay, you leave Stillwater, you go to New England, and all of a sudden you're sitting in the quarterback room with Tom Brady. Did you just think this was like a dream? And what was your relationship like with Tom Brady?
It was a whirlwind. I mean, you get there and you're just thrown into, their system, which the New England way is different than pretty much everywhere else in the NFL. And lots expected out of you. There's a, you know, you kind of have this sense when you walk in the building, like a fear almost every day, which is like, that's just their whole mantra is, you know, how are these guys going to respond to the meeting room when we call them out in front of the whole team asking this question? You know, it's just every single day there's something, but being able to just be around Brady and coming from the offense we had, and then just seeing the offense that they were running there, it was just, I mean, obviously it's night and day. They're running a very, very complex system, and I, you know, just had to work my butt off just to even keep up in the meeting room, and you know, because he's basically the offensive coordinator, you know, in that organization. You know, he's been in the same system for, you know, 10, 11 years, and just trying to keep up with all the protections and everything. You don't realize when you're in college how much is going into it in the NFL. So that was an eye-opening experience and a ton of fun. I was, you know, very privileged to be able to be in that room and learn as much as I did my rookie year, because I know a lot of guys don't get the chance to you know, learn at that high of a level of the intricacies of the game. So it was really great.
Well, and I read that you had a locker between Brady and Randy Moss. What was that like?
Yeah. Oh man, it was interesting. Randy Moss is one of the greatest guys I've ever been around. Funny, you know, I'm sure you guys have heard him on the 30 for 30 and just how he talked, you know, country boy from the sticks in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And what you see is what you get with him, man. He's not afraid to, you know, bust your balls on anything. He's just a good dude. And so, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think Gronk was right next to us. And, if you can imagine that whole area was, it was pretty interesting.
You go from Oklahoma State hanging out at Murphy's and all of a sudden you're between Randy Moss, Rob Gronkowski, and Tom Brady.
Yeah. And Rob Gronkowski was my roommate too.
oh my God.
I saw the early days of Gronk and, had to, you know, kindly remove myself from some situations there as I was fighting for a roster spot or just even be on the practice squad. So, it was, yeah, like you said, man, it couldn't have been more night and day from Stillwater to that situation.
Do you have a Gronk roommate story you can tell on the podcast?
Oh gosh. No.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I'm going through and all of them are
That's okay. We don't want to incriminate you or Gronk. I do want to go back to your OSU days. Dez Bryant shows up and you throw your first pass to this guy. Did you just know right away this guy is just a different breed of cat?
Yeah, you could tell. I mean, within the first day him being there, it was a different deal. He's catching balls one-handed. He's making every catch look so easy, just playing catch. And that was the thing about Dez, is he just loved catching balls early in practice. He'd get out there early in practice, and he just loved throwing and playing catch. And I think that's where he just developed these hands that he can make these ridiculous catches, because he's done it his whole life. He just loves being out there and playing ball. And that's one thing about Dez, is he just absolutely loves the game. And I can remember, I think it was about my sophomore year, when he was kind of going into my junior year after his freshman year. And during the summer, him and then Keith Tosin and Kendall Hunter and I would stay after practice, you know, during the summer when you do 7-on-7. And so the whole game was Kendall Hunter and Keith Tosin trying to cover Dez, you know, in goal line on the 5-yard line, you know, 2-on-1 type of deal. And that was when I really learned, like, you can throw this ball, you know, as long as you give him a chance, like, he is going to make a play on the ball. And some of those, you know, where, you know, Kendall's on, you know, grabbing his leg and Keith's on, and he goes up and makes a catch. And that was kind of where I figured out, like, hey, this is where you can put the ball and he's going to go up and make plays. And as silly as it sounds, I mean, we got some good work, whether it was just a, you know, fun game after 7-on-7 or whatnot, that it really kind of developed a, you know, rapport in what he could really do. So, I mean, the guy's unbelievable and a great teammate, a lot of fun to play with, obviously.
Yeah. The one I remember with Dez, I think it was Bedlam 08. and you guys were on OU's like 15 or something, and you had dropped back and you were getting chased, and you kind of just kind of lofted it up, and he came back and caught it like 3 inches off the ground and turned around. Yep. And do you remember that?
I remember exactly the play. We got all out blitzed. I wasn't expecting it, kind of was falling back and, you know, knew where Dez was, knew like where our hot was. And I didn't get a whole lot on the ball. I was off my back foot. And just kind of, like you said, slung it to him, and he came back and, I mean, just scooped that thing right off the turf, and then turned around and, you know, made a touchdown. So, you know, some of the stuff that he does is just, you just look at each other and you're like, man, that guy's on a whole different level.
How did he compare to guys that you saw in the NFL? I mean, was he as good at Oklahoma State as dude you saw in the NFL?
Yeah, I think the only guy that I would compare him to is Calvin Johnson. Calvin obviously is a different type in that he's so big and he's so fast, straight line. But as far as like just going up and getting a ball, there's nobody that's better than him. And it kind of took the Cowboys, you know, a couple of years to really figure out, like, really don't, I always found out like, hey, don't lead him. He's looking for you to throw that on the back shoulder. Like, unless he gets a really good release right off of bat, then lead him down there. But a lot of the times he'll kind of get his eyes back to you and, you know, stay even with the defender, expecting he wants to go up and make those, you know, jump ball catches. And, you know, it's finally they, you know, you see him last year and year before kind of figure that out, that, hey, basically red zone, let's just box out the, you know, DB and throw that thing high on his back shoulder and he'll make plays. But AJ Green's a totally different player. He was more, you know, kind of finesse, wanted to, you know, let the ball come down to him and just beat you with his speed. But Dez and Calvin, pretty comparable. But gosh, I think I would take, you know, Dez, you know, 10 times out of 10 in those situations.
Besides Dez, we know he's probably the best teammate you had. Who else is like the best teammate you had at Oklahoma State?
Gosh, there's so many guys that we were, you know, we had a pretty special group there for a couple of years. But one guy that I really almost looked up to was Dantrell Savage. You guys remember him, little running back.
Oh yeah.
My first year starting, my sophomore year, he was a full-time running back, and the amount of energy that he brought to a game, when he would get hit, and I don't know if you guys remember how quickly he would
jump up.
After.
Yeah, he would like jump.
It was crazy, and it made everybody else around you do it. I would do it. I would get hit hard. I would bounce back up. Everybody that got hit, and it just brought this energy and this juice to our offense that was awesome. And, you know, he sticks out, and as well as Kendall Hunter. I mean, just a lot of fun to play with. He was, you know, you could kind of mess with him when you're in the backfield together, crack a joke and whatnot. And, he'd like look at you like, man, you're stupid. Like, what are you talking about? And, so he was a lot of fun. Those two guys, were a blast to play with. I mean, among the many, many other guys as well.
What's your favorite game that you played in at Oklahoma State, or maybe the most memorable one, the one that in 20 years you'll tell your kids about and kind of look back on fondly?
Yeah, I think, it's probably got to be the 2008 Missouri game. When we, you know, going on the road, and we were kind of still, I think we were, I'm not sure what our record was, but maybe had 5 wins or we were 5-0, kind of flirting in the teens ranking wise, and Missouri was 2. We thought we were pretty good, but we didn't, you know, we hadn't played anybody really yet. We didn't know. And, going up there and beating a good Missouri team who, you know, had a really good offense and a bunch of guys that are still playing in the NFL, that, I think that was a pretty big kickstart just to the rest of that season, as well as, you know, just kind of the program in general and putting us, kind of on the map to be a perennial, you know, top 20, top 25 team. That was a big game that, that a lot of us, I think, will remember. And it was a lot of fun to play in, you know, a hostile environment. As you know, night games on the road in the Big 12 are those games are a lot of fun. It's pretty much that's why you play. And so that's one that will definitely stick out for a long time.
Yeah, that's one Mike Gundy still points out to this day as like the turning point, really, in the program. I think Chase Daniel and them didn't have a three and out going into that game, and
yeah,
your defense forced it.
Yeah, I think within like the second series, maybe even the first series, they had a three and out. I was like, oh man, these guys came to play. Sexton had a good game. The defense played, forced some turnovers. That was that game was just a whole lot of fun.
Okay, Zach, one of the biggest. I want to get conspiracy theorist with you here. One of the biggest mysteries in OSU football history is how, I don't mean to disparage the guy, I'm sure he was a great teammate, how Alex Cate was number two on the depth chart behind you and Brandon Whedon was third. You were there, you were at the practices, how could that be?
Yeah, Alex Cate was, he was smart, he knew the offense, he ran it well enough in practice, and, you know, for whatever reason, I don't, you know, Brandon was, he was still learning the game. I mean, gosh, he was, just a few years removed from playing pro baseball. And sometimes it just wouldn't show up in practice that, just reads or whatever it might have been, it just didn't really show up that he could separate. And as you guys know, a lot of times you don't really know what you got until the guy plays, you know, in a game when the lights are on. And, that was the case for, a ton of guys that I see that have success now. It's like, yeah, maybe he's okay in practice, but man, he's a gamer. And Brandon is that, you know, as soon as he stepped on the field, you know, that Colorado game, it was like, okay, like he's just a totally different guy out here on the field than he was in practice. And, I don't think it wasn't really anything that Brandon, you know, did or didn't do, but Cate just kind of didn't really give up the job. Like he did well enough in practice and he knew the offense. He had been there for a long time. And so I think they, you know, at that point they felt comfortable with Alex and then it didn't work out. And Brandon just obviously put a stamp on that game and then propelled him to a good career.
Yeah, I've got a couple conspiracy theories of my own about that Colorado game, but we probably don't need to get into those. I did want to ask you
Colorado game.
Wasn't it the Colorado game?
Oh, that game. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, when Whedon came in at halftime. Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah. I did want to ask you who the best defensive player you ever played against was, either college or the NFL.
Gosh, that best defense. Defensive player, I think, man, at the time, probably Earl Thomas. The fact he took a pick six on me that to this day, I don't even know how he read that play. I mean, I ended up training, we had the same agent, so we trained together coming out. And, I asked him about the play, and I mean, his reasoning was like, I was like, wow, you're just a smart dude for a defensive guy. But he's probably the most instinctive, I mean, fast, tenacious. I mean, as you see, he's like the best safety in the league now. And you could see it pretty early, at Texas, he was going to be pretty special, but yeah, some of the stuff that guy does back there, just instincts wise, cause I was in Seattle with him too, you know, doing scout team reps and you're just like, how did you get over to that spot? You're supposed to be way over there. You know, it's crazy how his instincts for the game he's probably one. And Sergio Kendall maybe was another. That guy, just looking out at that guy on the D-line, was like, holy smokes, like, you guys better get two or three on him. But he was something special. It was too bad he got hurt, and I would have liked to see what he could have done in the NFL.
Zach, you and I were in college at the same time at OSU, and I think every girl I knew had a crush on you. Set the scene for me. I kind of have a running joke.
My wife had a crush on you.
Yeah, my girlfriend in college had a crush on you, so I'm sure business was good. But I have a running joke that the OSU quarterback, after a big win, goes and takes his throne under the neon palm trees at Murphy's, and you were the originator of this joke. Clint Chell followed in your footsteps, and now Mason Rudolph. What was it like? Take me through an actual day in the life of Zach Robinson after a big win in Stillwater. What did you actually do?
Man, a lot of the times it was try to find somewhere that wasn't too packed to go eat with my family, which is always a disaster. You're checking out Chili's and whatnot, that, you know, the slim pickings that you have to eat there after a game. And so I go eat with my family, usually hang out with the buddies, watch, you know, the night games, you know, whatever game was on that night, have some people at our apartments. And then, you know, if we were up for it, you know, go to Murphy's or what was the other place? Copper Penny, some of those. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I didn't do it a whole lot during the season, just because a lot of times you get done with those games, you're like, man, I don't even want to, like, talk to anybody, you know, especially, you know, obviously after a loss, it would never happen. But after wins, even, you're so exhausted, you just kind of want to hang out and watch some football. So, yeah, that was kind of, you know, the whole process, I guess, as you after games.
Well, it, we'll get this wrapped up. Carson and I could do this all day, but we know you got to get going. What?
Yeah, no, no worries, fellas. I got nothing going on. So.
What is it like being? I mean, how difficult is it being QB1 in Stillwater with how small of a town it is? I always found it weird that, like, you're like for example, Mason Rudolph, all of a sudden he becomes this such a public figure at such a young age, and you have people that are two or three times your age that are so invested in your life and your career. I mean, what is that like?
Right. I think, you know, at the time when it's happening, it's all moving so fast. You don't even really have time to sit back and realize how crazy it is. And, you know, now it's easy to see, but, you know, when you're going through it, it's like, you know, you kind of get used to it. You go to McAllister's, you grab a sandwich, you're expected to take, you know, a handful of pictures with people or sign a few out. Like, it's just kind of comes with it. And I mean, it's fun. It's fun that everybody's so excited about, you know, what you're doing and what's going on campus. And you know, it is cool to go to a small town school like that, just cause, you know, you get to know the people around the city and it makes it fun. So, you know, I look back now and think, like, golly, there was a lot going on, but when you're in the moment, you're kind of just rolling, you're doing your day-to-day stuff and you don't even really have time to sit back and think about it.
Zach, I don't know if you know this, but yesterday was the 8-year anniversary of Mike Gundy's rant, whatnot, with the Bobby Reed situation. I know you're probably tired of talking about it, tired of hearing about it, but you were there for that, and you were, you know, you battled Bobby for the starting job. What do you remember about that? After the big, it was a big win over Tech. You played great, and then this rant happens, and it just kind of took over the universe in Stillwater. What do you remember about those days?
Yeah, I remember. Gosh, I remember going into the media room after the game there in the old East Side, I guess, which you guys would remember. But I remember going in there and everybody just had blank faces, all the media. You know, you expect to go in there, everybody's kind of fired up. We just won a crazy game against Tech. And I think I remember Bill Haston was like the first one that kind of quietly came up and said, he goes, hey, you know, did you know what was about to happen here with Coach Gundy after the game? And I said, what are you talking about? And he looked at me, he goes, don't worry, you'll see it later on the news. So I had no idea it was going to happen. And it was just kind of an awkward, weird silence in there. They didn't ask many questions about the game. It was kind of like, you know, we got in and got out in like, you know, a few minutes and then that was it. And then obviously go to, you know, eat dinner that night and see it all over the place. So it was pretty interesting, you know, dealing with it, after, you know, from there forward.
Yeah, it would have been, for me, it would have been great if it happened like 7 years later. For the sake of my website, that would have generated about a billion page views. But I'll get you out of here on this. Carson and I are uniform aficionados. I heard some rumors from some equipment guys that you were pretty particular about your uniform setup back in the day. Do you like what Oklahoma State is doing? Do you wish they were more like Oregon? What are your thoughts on Oklahoma State's uniforms?
I like it. I think I don't know. I think they're doing, you know, they got some really cool stuff. But sometimes I just like the, you know, white helmet, white face mask, orange OSU logo. Like that is my favorite look for helmet wise. And some of the, you know, mirrored ones and stuff, I don't get too fired up about, but the rest of the jerseys are sweet, man. I mean, it's just, you know, it was frustrating. You know, we text with some of my buddies that, you know, we graduated with, and it's like seriously, we couldn't get, you know, this couldn't have happened a couple of years earlier. We couldn't get like at least 1 year with, you know, new uniforms. But yeah, they obviously, you know, those guys have got it going on with the unis, and they got some pretty sweet stuff.
Yeah, the wildest thing you guys got to do was wear orange pants at home. That was like the big
step
up. Yeah,
that was the big deal, man. It was like, yeah, we would go warm up in white pants, and you came back in your locker, and you had orange pants in there, and everybody went nuts. But the times have changed a little bit.
So this rumor that I heard was that you had kind of these, like, cleats that you really liked, and Nike would like send them to you. So, like, is this true? Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, that's funny that you said that, because Mason Rudolph said he asked me about the exact same thing this summer. I guess those equipment guys are just spreading some nasty rumors, but I'll have to get with them later. But there was one cleat that I saw, actually Matthew Stafford was wearing them at the Manning camp. And I was like, man, what are those things? Like, those are sweet. And he said, you know, they were the Air Huaraches or whatever. And so I went up, I asked, it was Wes. And I asked Wes, I said, hey, like, is there any way I can get these cleats? And he goes, yeah, sure, no problem. And so I think he ordered like 8 pairs of them or something. And, you know, little I know now, you know, like 8 years later, it's coming back to bite me that I was, you know, difficult to deal with and whatnot. But yeah, I would be a little bit of, you know, once I got everything on game day, it was good. But like the anxiety leading up to the game and like making sure everything was going, you know, in plan, was probably the worst part of game day. Just getting everything ready to go and feeling good about going to the game. So, but that's funny that you said that, man. That's hilarious.
It's good to know you care as much as we do about the uniforms.
That's on the the equipment guys. They got to take care of QB1 and not talk about it.
They can't let the anxiety build like that.
Yeah, the whole look good, feel good, play good is 100% true. So, you know, whatever those guys think, it's whatever.
Well, Zach, we really appreciate you doing this and taking so much time. And hope to do it again. I actually live in Dallas, so if Carson can get down here, maybe we can go get 18 holes in.
I'm there. It, you guys, let me know.
I'm there. I want all the Dez stories that you can't tell.
I think it's all the Gronk stories.
Or Gronk stories.
Yeah, there could be a mixture of quite a few there.
Okay, Zach, thanks a lot for coming on, and we will talk to you later on.
Thanks, Zach.
Cool. Thanks a lot, fellas. Take care.
All right, Kyle, that was a lot of fun. I hope we weren't too much like the Chris Farley show. Like, remember that time when you threw it to Dez? That was awesome. Were we like that too much or not?
No, I don't think so, because we were asking him about things that everybody remembers. It's not like I was like, remember that throw against Troy you had in 2007? That was great, though. How good was, you know, how? I don't know. I feel like he had good stories, and that was a lot of fun.
It was. Roommates with Gronk was an all-timer.
That's unbelievable.
He locker between Brady and Moss was insane, and then he's roommates with Gronk. So
I was looking up some old stuff on him, and I saw it was an article by Robert Allen that he was asking him about having a locker between Moss and Brady, and I just started laughing because I was like, we got to ask him about this.
Yeah, no doubt. That was awesome.
What did you think about what he said since it just happened? What do you think? Or what did you think about what he said about the uniform stuff?
As far as the way he treats it, or just that they wish they had new unis?
Well, I thought it was interesting because I feel like people always complain talking about uniforms, but it really is a big deal to players, you know?
Oh, yeah. It was great to hear a player put as much thought into it as we do. And there is something, too, like if you feel like you look good, play good, all that, like that's an old quote. I think Jerry Rice was the originator of all that. So it's a thing. And as much as people complain about it, it gets clicks and people love talking about it.
Yeah. Matthew Stafford's arm?
I knew before, like, he gave the answer, he was going to say Stafford had the most arm talent. Like, his arm's pretty legendary as far as its strength and everything. But it was interesting that Whedon throws the tightest spiral. I knew Whedon could throw it, obviously.
Well, but I go back to, I think it was at Tech in 2011, I think.
Mm-hmm. I was at that game, yeah.
When it was just
howling.
Yeah, 40 mile an hour, 50 mile, and he's just throwing seeds, and it's like you can't do that unless you do throw a tight spiral, I feel like.
Yeah, that was maybe the best game he's ever played.
That was unreal. That was the 66-14 game. That was the game with the legendary gif of that poor Tech fan just
guns up, head down.
Yeah, guns up, head down.
That's when the Heisman campaign really got going for Brandon that game.
I saw that David Ubbin was tweeting about that the other day. Do you think if Quinn Sharp makes that kick in Ames, that do you think Brandon Whedon wins the Heisman?
Oh, I don't know. Who won it that year? Was it Robert Griffin?
Yeah.
I think the hype on Griffin was too much to overcome, I think. I mean, he would have had a shot. He would have been in New York for sure. I still don't know if he wins it, but he would have been in New York. And I actually, like, in hindsight, like, I was campaigning for Brandon that season. I didn't think, you know, the way Robert Griffin struggled with Kansas and a few of the games, he got smoked by OSU. I just didn't think he was deserving to be the best player in college football when that happens. But the more I look back on it, man, shouldn't Justin Blackmon have won the Heisman? Like you look at his numbers, like, that's the best season from a receiver probably since Desmond Howard. Like,
well,
if you go back and look at all the numbers. Like,
it's not going to happen. If I would go back to Larry Fitzgerald, 2003 or 2004 or whatever.
Yeah, he lost to Jason White, yeah.
And if it doesn't happen, I mean, that guy was unbelievable. I mean, he was not on a talented team. I just think if you're a receiver, you have to either – you have to be like Charles Woodson, where you play both ways, or you have to return punts because just as a single receiver, if Larry Fitzgerald and Justin Blackmon can't win it, it's just not going to happen. The reason I think Griffin still would have won it that year is because he played his couple of his best games at the end. He had that crazy game against OU. And I think Blackmon would have just taken away from Whedon a little bit in terms of the voting.
Yeah, well, I look at Blackmon's numbers. His sophomore year was actually better than his junior year.
Yeah.
He had 1,720 touchdowns as a sophomore.
That's silly.
And 1,518 touchdowns as a junior.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It'd be a fun hindsight, but I don't think the RG3 hype was too much to overcome, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You got any lingering thoughts from the Zach interview? Anything else you were interested by? Earl Thomas, that was an interesting answer.
Yeah.
Was Earl Thomas on that 05 team?
He might have been a freshman.
Okay. I thought I remember him.
I don't know
him.
If he played.
I thought I remember him playing, but maybe not.
You're thinking of Michael Griffin, I think, was the safety on that team. They just had a bunch of safeties with dreads that just could pulverize you.
Well, and they, like, all played for the Seahawks at one point, I feel
yeah,
like.
Exactly. No, I mean, the Dez stuff was just hilarious. The two guys having to cover him. I mean, like he's still catching it.
The idea of Kendall Hunter, like, hanging on to Dez's leg is pretty outstanding.
Yeah. The whole thing was great, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome. It was fun. We need to do more stuff like that, and hopefully we will. We got a couple other irons in the fire, as they say, so hopefully we'll get some more good war stories, as you called them, from guys' OSU days.
Absolutely, man.
Okay. Texas this weekend?
Texas. I'm going to Austin. I'll be there. How you feeling about the game?
I kind of feel like Oklahoma State's going to get beat.
Really?
Yeah, I do. And I don't know why. I think I'm interested. I'm very intrigued by this Gerard Hurd fellow.
Lad.
You saw did you see the stat that I posted? Three guys in the last 15 years have posted 360 yards passing, 160 on the ground in a single game, and one of those is Jonathan Football, and the other is, or one of the others is Gerard Hurd. I just think that people are sort of underrating how dangerous this game is from an Oklahoma State standpoint.
Oh, it's dangerous for sure. That's why the point spread's only 3. I would be surprised if OSU didn't win. Texas has all sorts of issues. Like, Cal's defense is awful. And they were up by, like, what, 20 points late? And Texas came storming back. I think if OSU is anything like we thought they were, especially on defense, I think they should win this game by at least a touchdown. But that's just me.
Yeah, I do too. It worries me that you get a Texas team that I think feels like it has momentum, even though it's 1-2, and it is, Big 12 opener. You kind of get to hit the reset button when conference play starts. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot going on. It's going to be – I think if Oklahoma State wins, I don't think people should write it off. I think that's a really good win.
Of course. But, I mean, I can see why you feel the way you do. I mean, OSU hasn't exactly been impressive, but – Hurd has played one game against Cal, so if Hurd does anything close to what he did to Cal against OSU, then Texas really has a quarterback on their hands.
Yeah, for sure. I think you got to – I don't know. It's going to be really interesting because Texas's run D obviously is just horrific, and they play a ton of freshmen on defense. So you got to move the ball. Like, you don't get to just be like, oh, we're in non-conference, we're kind of trying some stuff out. You got to move the ball. And I don't care how. You don't have to run, flea flickers and everything, but you got to run the ball. You got to create turnovers. And you got to figure out how to contain Hurd because, you've seen all the quotes from J.W. Walsh's dad who coached him in high school. If he gets momentum, if he gets going, he's dangerous. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, Tyrone Swoops ain't walking through that door. But I'm picking OSU by 10. I got him 31-21.
I like that. I hope it happens. I've kind of just abstained from picking games anymore because nobody
it's for the best.
Nobody cares if you're right, and
no one remembers.
People bring it up if you're wrong, and it's like, this is stupid. Like, I don't, whatever. But should be a good game. Stay safe in Austin. That's a dangerous place.
I'm not a foreigner. I've been there a ton. My best friend lives down there, so I know where to go and where not to go. So I should be okay.
Okay.
If not, you might be getting a phone call from me from a 1-800 number.
I'm 90 minutes away. No, I'm more like 150 minutes away. So just holler at me.
You need an excuse to get to Austin. You need to get out of the house, away from the wife and kids. So I might put in a faux emergency call just to get you out of the house.
I did tell Zach Robinson that my wife had a crush on him in college. So.
You did. You've been waiting to tell him that ever since college, too.
It feels
sure.
good. It feels good to get that off my chest. Now I got to go tell my wife that I told Zach Robinson that she had a crush on him.
Everyone did. My college girlfriend did, too. So
yeah. It's not breaking news.
No. Zach knows what's up. So, yeah. All right, man. It was fun. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Carson. Talk to you later.